Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock. Thank you all so much for joining us today as it is our very first Fireside Chat with all of you live. That is right. We have now started a Fireside Chat YouTube channel. So come on by, see how cozy Paul Sporer and I are in front of the fire. And well, of course, I should introduce him. Paul, how are you doing today?
Nicholas, I'm well. It's good to be with you. You had some travel disruptions.
Sure did.
Caused a week off for us, but we're back ready to talk some pitching by the fire. And I'm excited. I really am.
Yeah, it's Paul is so nice because I had to travel back on Monday, which meant that the list had to come out on Tuesday when we would normally do the fireside. So here we are on Thursday. And moving forward, if you want to catch this live, that's 12 p.m. Eastern time at YouTube, Fireside Chat Podcast. I don't know. It's there.
You'll find it.
Just go there. You'll find it.
We'll put a link in this so you can subscribe.
There you go.
And then it's there.
And bam. Easy. Look at this guy. So today, you know, we have the trade deadline. It has passed last week. If you missed the trade deadline spectacular, it was a great time.
Had a blast.
So many trades. And that was so good. Sporer and I do it every year. Once again, thank you for joining us. If you were there, I wanted to start looking forward to next year just a little bit. And yes, we do have 2 months to go. I'm going to be doing my schedule stuff in about 3 weeks. I'm going to have my first one that is doing the roundup based on future schedules. We'll have a lot of stuff to talk about there. Sporer, you have your rankings coming out next week, so we're going to have an episode for that. But now we're in the thick of things inside of the season. It's always nice to reflect for 2025 before you have the whole bucket of the year that you're looking at in like October, November. There's a lot of value to this for me, where certain times you see like, oh, I didn't realize they had like a 3.6 ERA or something.
Right.
Because in season, you aren't looking at this guy and treating him like a 3.6 ERA. And yes, that's where the chips fell. But you know, as an analyst, that's not really something you should buy in on. But then all of a sudden, the conversation changes. He had that, so maybe he does again. And the perspective isn't quite what we think it is moving forward. And it's important for us to kind of look at these guys in season and say, okay, is this something that is real? Is it not? Is it development? All of that. So, Sporer, today we're going to look at, are these guys Baja men for 2025? Do you know what Baja men are?
I do. They've been known to let canines into the more outdoor range of the world.
They do.
Or at least maybe they don't do it, but they're very inquisitive about who did it.
Who did it?
If they haven't done it, they want to get to the bottom of who has dispersed these dogs into an outdoor region.
Right. So, this is like a smelt a delta thing. Whoever said the rhyme did the crime. You know, you're figuring out who let the dogs out. But they were a one-hit wonder, the Baja men, of course, in the days of summer. And we're trying to discern who are these guys from this year who have produced at a way that you've accepted, brought them onto your teams that we didn't quite think would be performing at this level this year. And is this something that is now a flag post or a just a newly written record into the books that is going to hold on to those skills for next year? That was a terrible sentence. Point of the matter is, this is real for next year. Okay.
Right. Are they Baja men?
Are
they legit? Are they just going to be here with us for a glorious summer? Because that song, I'm old enough to remember when it came out, and I was the demographic. I was a kid. That song banged, dude. Come on. That was a wonderful song.
That was such a good song. But then there was just nothing else. I actually even remember the infomercial that Baja men had after.
Oh, my goodness. I do not
remember that. Their album, including the song.
That's amazing.
They knew that there was nothing else on here.
Right.
Yeah, it was just that song. So they tried.
Remember when you had to buy a whole record?
Yeah, 1999 plus shipping and handling, guys.
Right.
Oh man, get it.
S&H, baby.
Oh boy,
shipping and handling.
So I'm actually trying to reflect in previous seasons who were your distinguished Baja men. You know, you can even say like Miles Michaelis is amazing season, or Tyler Anderson had one.
Herman
you could
Marquez.
Say like Zach Godley had his before he fell off.
Perfect name for it, by the way.
Yeah.
Godley. Herman Marquez.
Herman Marquez, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Think that glorious summer there where he tamed Coors, which he did for that time, but he
That was 2018. And I think that was the same year that like Zach Wheeler and Walker Buehler both really showed up too. Maybe it was even that one or maybe the one beforehand. I just remember it was a conversation like Germán Márquez, but, yeah, but hold on, like these other ones I think might be a little bit more interesting.
Right.
So identifying of these who have really had those, not necessarily always breakouts, but just rostered on your 12 teamers, who are the ones that we think are going to be more of the same or a little bit different. So I'm going to do this straight from, I'm looking at my list and just going through and saying, okay, cool, this is new and I don't know, and so on and so forth. I'm going to skip over the obvious ones of like your Jerry Jones and your Paul Skeens.
Right.
And
we're
like,
in.
You know that's there. I mean, you could even say that like Blake Snell is such an interesting one.
True.
Because it's hot Snell summer and he's done this for 4 years or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, I think you had a point to be made about Snell.
So, I mean, Blake himself said that the lack of spring training completely affected him, as you might expect it would, right? That's probably the default that we would go from. But we've certainly seen guys have short springs and not be affected. But I do think it makes sense that it is completely connected. He said he simply didn't have his stuff, didn't really have command. And I know, like, at his best, Blake keeps walking guys too. So people are like, well, when does he ever have his command? But you know that he has these purposeful walks versus when he has no idea where the ball's going. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't look like himself. He then suffered a couple injuries on top of it. I don't know. I love Blake Snell. Everyone knows I'm in the bag for him, so I don't want to not have that bias out. But it was just hard to ever really consider quitting him this year. And I don't say that just with the benefit of hindsight. It's just at any point we were talking like 5, 6, maybe 7 starts. I realized it was later in the season where other guys were putting up their 15, 16, 17, 18 starts. But with the injuries, it's like, what were you going to do? Cut him? I just never thought that that made any sense without giving Snell a fair shake to see if he could be the guy again.
Yeah, it's so funny because I had Snell ring 33 first pitch Arizona. I don't know if you remember this. And I'm doing the On the Corner podcast there. And Eno comes over and we have this fantastic back and forth for like 5 minutes after I'd already said like, I don't know, 33 versus like 25, like all these guys are so close, whatever. And he's like, no, you gotta be hiring Blake Snell. I'm like, where do you have him? He's 29. I'm like, okay. But it was a great moment. But the reason I was so low on Snell after he just won a Cy Young was exactly what you described, though. It was dealing with this for months and then also the anxiety. And you don't really truly know that Blake Snell is going to do this kind of run. Like, this is such an elite run.
Right.
That it's really, really hard to bank on it and actually say
he was tough to bet
on, but not just good. It's going to be like the best pitcher in baseball. Good, you know?
Right.
That's so difficult. And even more to that, what's so interesting to me is last year when Blake Snell had his run, what I remember, and it might be the same thing for you too, is Snell was struggling with both his curve and his slider. And so what did he do? All of a sudden woke up and had his changeup cooking. And this is the best version of his changeup he's ever had.
He loves his changeup. Like, and he always so wants it.
I used to tell him not to do it. And he stopped in 2022 and 2021. And that's when he had his second half. So when he stopped using it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other stuff wasn't working. So then he went to it. And that was 2023's run. And what's so interesting is this run is different because the changeup is there, but the curveball is a different animal. This is all of a sudden the most consistent curveball I've ever seen from Blake Snell. It's massively in the zone whenever he needs it. It's getting all the whiffs. He doesn't throw his slider now. Like, he's just completely been like, that slider, not it. I mean, he even had 5 out of 8 strikes in Wednesday's game, which is amazing for Blake Snell, that slider.
Right.
But the point of the matter is it's a curveball that I've never seen from Snell that is most the most dependable one. And I have to, it makes it tough for even next year because what I'm seeing are just 3 different pitchers in 3 different years having successful second halves.
Yeah. And it is really difficult with somebody like Blake Snell. Like, how much do you trust? And what price point do you want to pay? Because, you know, if he continues at this clip, this sort of, you know, Cy Young worthy esque guy that he's been now for 6 starts since coming up, where he's showing better command and control than we've ever seen as a combo, where both are there, even has like a 8% walk rate, which is not amazing, but for Blake, it is. Yeah, you know, he lives in the low double digits there. So he's even not walking as many guys as we saw last year, even though that worked for him with the huge strikeouts. I mean, nobody's barreling him at all. And I'm sure the 135 BABIP will regress. But if you don't think he's playing a role in it, watch any of these starts. He is dealing right now. And Snell looks amazing. So I don't know. I think, you know, let's just say he kind of stays on this general trajectory, not this guy who has a 217 FIP over six starts, but a very competent top of the scale NL type pitcher, right? Or just say overall pitcher, because who cares if it's AL versus NL. So are you thinking top 35 again, closer to the back end of it?
It's gonna be the same thing.
Because I think so too. I don't think anything can happen to change me to maybe to push him up. Like, even if he did stay at this clip, like, let's say he just like does not stop for two more months, I still don't think I'm really moving him super high up, because I still have to acknowledge the troubles of that first part of the season for Snell.
Right.
I give him a pass for what happened with regards to the injuries and everything, but the command issues are still part of who he can be. And we know that drop.
It's inconsistent. He's the most extreme version of the Vargas rule.
Right. Exactly.
So absurdly good. And to me, he's a hipster. It's just heading inducing pitcher, stifling the entire roster. This is why I'm out on Hunter Green this year. It's why I messed that one up. And we'll get to him in a moment. But
let's go right to him.
That's actually fine too. But I do want to mention, it's the same concept of entering this year. I didn't think we would get to a point that we would just feel confident with him. Obviously, we're at that now. And I missed out on it, because I certainly weigh my preseason ranks differently. I'm not just kind of like, here's the projection line, spit it out. I don't think really anyone does that, but I certainly say there's a factor of, are you as a fantasy manager, I'm trying to limit as much decision, like hard decisions as possible. Like, how can I just make this easy as ever? Easy decision, drop them or hold them. Like, I don't want the middle ground stuff. I think the middle ground pitchers are the ones that bring you down the entire year, because you hold them on for too long and that's how you lose.
It depends. So here's the thing. I think stuff like that can be done in moderation. And of course it is very lead dependent. The problem ends up being is the people that are willing to take on that risk are willing to take on a lot of it. So they don't just get Blake Snell as their gamble guy. They throw in two prospects and, you know, some other like, you know, high Great risk point. Situation. Yeah. I know, because I used to be that guy. I very much guy. Used to be that guy. It is fun at the draft table, right? And sometimes you're just trying to have some fun. And then you look at the 14th place team and you're like, that's not so fun. So I'd rather have more fun during the season. It doesn't mean you have to draft all boring players and you can't take any risks. But where you put your risk profiles matter. And I think if you stack up similar ones, right? If you do, some people like to do all the lottery ticket pitching. Like, I'm going to hit on a few of these and I'm going to churn the rest. Mm-hmm. In a shallower league, I have no problem with that.
Right.
In 15 teamers, you're not doing it. You're not going to find the names, because we're all scrounging for them. So that's another thing that changes the context of it. I might be more open to Snell in a 15 teamer, because if he hits big. Mm-hmm. And I know you can make the case the other way and say get stability in 15, so you're not making too many waves. But I do like taking the gamble sometimes on the guy who could hit the big ace season, depending on the price, though. The thing for me is he never dropped in price. He was top 70, top 80 for Blake Snell all draft season without being signed. And that was just too pricey for me. So that's why I stayed out. If we got him outside the top 100, I can start to get there, but I don't know if we're going to now that he's hot.
Yeah, what's so interesting too is we think like, oh yeah, well, Blake sounds great now that everything is saved. Well, it's not, because right now, if you just look at the full season, what you've done, it's two wins in a 4-3-1 ERA.
Right. It's still
so
ugly.
So he has to continue this for a while to get to a point that's saying, see, look, I am worth that hold through the year. And you really need to reflect at the end of the year, like, okay, was this roster spot utilized the correct way? Even with an amazing second half or not, depends on Rota versus head-to-head. When are you getting those? Looking into that, it's a conversation, of course, to be had after the season. Now, Hunter Green, sticking with that, I talked about him a little bit with Eno on the craft, but what's so crazy to me is just, you know, you brought it up before too, is the homers, man. He went from 12 homers in 2023 on the four-seamer to just four in 2024, despite throwing more four-seamers already.
Right.
This season.
Right.
That is 33% of the home runs. It's a 0.7 homer per nine versus a 1.5 that he had last year. His overall BABIP is down 100 points.
He's just pitching so much better. My eye keeps going to that home run rate on Hunter Greene and wondering, like, is it just that? But it isn't, because then again, there's also the 240 BABIP, which I believe he's playing a role in. But I'm curious on Hunter Greene if you've seen anything within the metrics of the fastball compared to last year that explains that betterment, because the velo's down, right? That's the first thing we look at.
Yeah,
velo's down, but it's still great. No one's crying about 97.7.
Right.
But it's not a velo spike. So what are the elements that are helping him be so much better? Because again, it's not just the home runs. They can't square him up for anything. Hunter Greene has a 179 average against. So tell us about that fastball.
Oh man, I wish I had a great answer for you guys. I really do. The best I have is that he added one extra inch of vertical break.
Okay.
On the fourth seamer. That's it. But the thing is, the results have just been so much better. I mean, ICR, ideal contact rate on this four-seamer, was 44% last year and is now down to 34%.
I'm kind of willing to believe that small of a change could be that impactful for somebody this good.
It's possible he throws that hard, right? The velocity
that's
drop
what I'm saying. He's
describing is 98.3 versus 97.7. Totally get it. He does have a little bit less horizontal break as well. So it's possible that it's just kind of staying more straighter in a way that is not going toward the barrel, or just a little bit more deceptive in that way. I mean, we see, like, we have our stat hit luck, which is essentially saying, based on the quality of this pitch, how many hits do we expect him to get over time versus how many he actually allows. Plus four in 2023 on this four-seamer, minus 14 this year. Last year's hitter performance, so based on the pitches, the hitters gain points against the pitcher when they do better than expected.
Right.
And it was 18 last year. Now, negative 14 this year, that 99th percentile.
Is crazy.
So this is so interesting to me, because our PLV mark on his four-seamers, Hunter Greene's four-seamer, is the same. It's exactly the same. The velocity drop and the inch and IVB pretty much equates each other.
Right.
Locations, this includes two, PLV does, pretty much the same. So then I go, okay, I don't really think it can be the fastball then. It can't really just be that the fastball has, of course, been so much better. It has to be something else. And the only thing I got for you is that he's throwing his slider a little bit more often behind in counts.
Okay. So just a change there, where maybe they were sitting fastball in some of those counts. I mean, again,
you know,
the margins in baseball are so small. It's not like he was bad last year. So
slider's a little bit more effective glove side. It's more glove side than it is arm side these days. Its ICR is way down, is down 6 points to just 28%. And this is a pitch he throws 35% of the time. You can make an argument that this new splitter is helping.
I was going to say, what do we make of Hunter Greene's 8% splitter?
About that, what's so interesting to me about this is when you have a splitter, when you add one to your arsenal, what do you think of? You think of, oh, you need a strikeout pitch.
Right.
You need a whip pitch.
Bury it.
It's going to be going late.
You want to pull the string on them sitting fastball.
Are 41% usage. Okay. Here's the thing. Greene doesn't throw his often in two strike counts. It's a 28% two strike, which is only 10th percentile. And this actually might be the thing. He has an 88th percentile early percentage on his splitter. And I wonder, I don't have this in front of me now, but I do wonder if batters got comfortable against Hunter Greene and started chasing four seamers early in counts.
Early.
And
yeah.
Splitter has helped nullify that just enough to actually counteract all that power. So I don't know. Is true first strike rate that is actually getting to an 0-1 count with a four seamer slightly went up? First strike rate includes balls in play, which Alex Fast hated, so he came up with true first strike rate.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
How often when you throw a first pitch strike, does it continue the at bat as opposed to the at bat?
Yeah, because you can get a lot of first pitch strikes if you just keep laying them in there.
And what I'm seeing is a minus 12 between those two. So for 2023, so 65 to 53, but a minus seven. For 2024. So there are more first early balls in play, 14% of them versus 11. I am obviously at the bottom of the barrel here. Okay.
Right.
It is Actually, that is interesting. 18th percentile early ball and play on the four seamer for Hunter Green this year versus the league average, which is 14%. So that might be the difference maker a lot. I don't know. It's strange. My end of the day analysis, Hunter Green's getting a little fortunate. It's going to be a little bit worse next year. You're going to hear this constantly throughout the entire offseason. He's right. Somewhere in between.
Because it sticks out like a sore thumb, y'all. Like, you just don't keep a 7% homer to fly ball rate. That's half of what Hunter Green's career rate is. And he pitches in Cincinnati. And the ball is still in the air. Like, everything is still the same. This is why we're digging for any little thing. Otherwise, I have to keep coming back to this and saying, like, he's pitching his butt off and things are going well. But I still am going to lean back on that 374 Sierra, which is exactly what it was last year for Hunter Green.
Yeah. So I just had a massive ramble, and I apologize. It's funny. Spurs like, oh, bring up Hunter Green. I'm like, oh, sure, here you go. And then I just went like 5 minutes of it.
No problem.
I apologize. We're going to talk more about these guys. We have a massive list. We're going to get to, hopefully I'll
some.
Not
we can speed through
really
some.
Again. We'll get to all those after this break. All right, Spurs. So we've got this long list here. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to throw out some names for everybody listening of like people to consider. Shota Imanaga. I'm wearing my I'm an AGA shirt, by the way, if right. You are watching on YouTube. Renato Lopez, Jack Flaherty, Michael King, Taj Bradley, Luis Gil, Ronel Blanco, Seth Lugo, Garrett Crochet, etc. Of those, is there one that you like, okay, I got to talk about this guy?
I want to see where you're at on Bradley. Taj Bradley, I know we're coming off a down night. Last night in St. Louis, I haven't dug into it. I was at trivia last night winning. No big deal.
Attaboy.
No big deal, except I had to mention it. But yeah. So, you know, tough outing and wasn't great against Miami. Allowed a couple homers against them, which was frustrating. I sat down to watch a Miami game because I wanted to watch Taj and he wasn't great. So, you know, a little couple hiccups here, but after a great run, is Taj Bradley emerging? Is he markedly better than last year when you look under the hood?
Yeah, my take on Taj Bradley is him being a two-pitch guy more than a three-pitch guy, that is having the cutter as a clear number three and four-seamer and splitter being the two, that is a better version of Taj Bradley. That's generally how I feel about him. I mean, the splitter showing up out of nowhere and all of a sudden now it's 29% usage is a big deal. That means moving away from the curveball and the changeup he had last year, cutter dropping from 25% to 20% usage. And what we've seen for the most part is above 65% strike rates on both the four-seamer and splitter, which is massively different than the 70% last year with the four-seamer and then this middling cutter at 63% and 62% on the changeup. Like having two, it's like this is the thing. And especially for a splitter that, I mean, it has fantastic results so far. CSW is 31%, it's 82nd percentile. He actually has a cult strike rate of near 15% on splitters, which you don't see. ICR is at 33% as well. I mean, it's a very good match for his four-seamer. So I'm in favor of that. The question I really have is, does Bradley have enough command to actually get pitch separation on them? And we didn't see that yesterday. That was the problem, I think, for Taj Bradley, is that just many of his pitches were just middle and clumped together, as opposed to four-seamers definitely being up all the time and then splitters being down. That's what I saw there. I think that over time, he should get better with it. And we saw how good his stretches can be. He's still a little cherry bomb to me.
And I think that's okay. I think that is where you should expect Taj Bradley to be down the stretch here. I know it can be hard when you've got a 3.07 ERA and a 1.09 whip from a guy in 91 innings. You think he's a reliable, bankable part of your rotation, especially if he's filling in for somebody. You should not feel that way. If he ends up being that way, great. You should plan as though Taj Bradley is not that, though. Just because there's not enough of a track record to believe that in the dog days of August and September, he's going to hold up for you. So again, we're not cutting in. I'm not doing anything like that. Of course, it's an easy hold even after the ugly outing at St. Louis. But start preparing contingencies now just because you don't know. And if Tampa Bay falls out of the race, then you know some shenanigans could come on. So I just want to prepare everyone. I'm very excited about Taj long term. I just feel like it could be goofy down the stretch, especially if they fall out and they don't really care about limiting his innings there. And then they start giving him like three innings and then Drew Rasmussen three innings or something. So I love Bradley long term, though. I'm very excited for next year.
Yeah, I hope so. And for the sake of Jason Collect, I hope so too for Taj Bradley. What is your take on Ronel Blanco?
It's funny. I was eyeing him as well. I think I'm going to have some belief in him because I don't think the market will. I think he's going to be priced pretty fairly at his age, that this is going to be totally one hit wonder, Baja man as heck. And I'm not so sure that it is. Now, caveat again, I play 15s, y'all. 15s versus 12s is different. I'm not saying it's better or anything. It's just different. So a guy like this, I can even look at his 416 Sierra, and I'm not too worried even if he fell all the way back to that. Because if it came with like a 110 whip and Ws, because I expect Houston to still be pretty decent again next year, I'm okay with it. But at 31, I don't think that the market's really going to dive in. I see a lot of elements I like. I see a world where the walk rate jumps up over 10% and he struggles a bit more with the whip. But he's so tough to hit that I still think his hit rate will keep Ronel Blanco's whip pretty serviceable even in a fallback year. I there is collapse potential because he's 31 and he has 182 major league innings. But I think he'll be priced fairly enough to buy Ronel Blanco next year at a relatively cheap price for what I think he can do.
So I'm going to pop quiz everybody. Okay.
Okay.
Pop quiz. Ronel Blanco has a four seamer slider and changeup as his main pitches. We're not going to talk about the 6% usage curveball.
Okay.
Which one of these has a 198 BABIP this year?
All of them.
Yeah, you know, there's some trickery. It's Nick Pollock here. Right. Take a guess though. It is a correct answer with one of them.
Changeup.
It is changeup has a 237. It is the slider at 198. The thing is, the four seamer has a 183.
Yeah, so you know he can't stay at that level, right? Nobody does.
So yes and no,
but he can remain tough to hit.
His Ronel Blanco, by the way, is so good, Ronel Blanco. And it's not necessarily like the Blake Snell, which, by the way, Blake Snell, of course, is just the king of mistake rates, like a 3%. He's fourth in the majors. Okay.
Do you want to explain what a mistake is specifically?
Oh, right. Great call. Mistake is a pitch that we
measure
doubles
this.
The chance inside the zone to allow a hit. So how often do you throw a super hittable pitch in the zone?
Right.
A meatball pitch. And the thing is, most guys I see have one of their main three. If they have three pitches as like their thing, one of them is like an 8% to 10% range. And even just understand that for four seamers, for example, the league average is 7% mistake rate, 7% for sliders, and like 6% for curves and roughly 7% for changeups. Okay. So there's always one that's
what
like
was fastball league average? I'm sorry.
About 7%.
Okay.
So just think like 7% league average for each of these.
Right.
And then usually there's one that's a little below average. None of Blanco's pitches are a 7% or higher with mistake rate. So I do want to mention that because, yes, he has had fortunate hit luck, but it's not that bad. It's like -5 on the four seamer. So he's got 5 fewer hits on that, -6 on the slider. So fine. But that's a lot of pitches. I mean, he's thrown over 600 of both of them. And they're just saying, yeah, he sure have had like 13 total hits over 1,300. So it's like one hit per game or something he's getting benefited on or something like that, right?
That's nuts.
That's not like this massive swing of regression, right? So 198 BABIP, you go, oh, well, of course, he's going to be whatever. Well, yeah, and no. He is pitching to that level-ish. Now, the question is, though, is that going to be the same guy we see next year?
Sure. That is the biggest question with Ronel Blanco. I am curious then, based on what you're saying with the mistake rate stuff, and you did invoke the name of Blake Snell, are you suggesting that maybe some of the walks for Ronel Blanco might have some purpose behind them as well?
Absolutely. Okay. One thing that I think my favorite thing about Blanco is that he does exactly what you should do if you have a four seamer that doesn't miss bats. You don't throw it 50% of the time in the zone.
Right.
48% zone rate with it. And that's how you should do it. You do not want this to be a heavy ball and play pitch. Mm-hmm. Right. And unfortunately for him, his strike and play percentage is above average. This is another thing that I'm like, okay, are you getting your strikes? Are you overpowering them in the zone, or are they becoming in play when you throw strikes on a pitch?
Right.
And his ball in play is 15%. And league average is around, I want to say, like 13-14% on a four seamer. So you want that lower. That said, the slider is such a good foundation. It really, really, really is. I take that back. Lower number for percentiles with ball in play. So yeah, no, that is below average. Good. 67th percentile means like 33rd percentile, which is good. You want that. You want that Blanco on your four seamer.
We love it, Blanco.
So that's how he does it, right? He does hip suppression by essentially saying the pitch that is most hittable, I won't give you, and you'll have to deal with the slider and the changeup a lot
exactly.
more. So I can understand that. He is in very much rhythm, though. That slider rhythm is so good for Blanco. Right. The changeup is in and out a little bit, and he will probably be worse. There's also a thing to mention, hasn't really been stretched out massively over the years.
True.
He's at 124 innings now. He is 30 and will be 31 at the end of the month. Maybe it's just a case of he's old enough to take it. I don't know.
You're right. We do not know.
Next year as we go to the offseason. So I think you're completely right. Your assessment of the value evaluation entering the offseason will not be relative to a 3 ERA and a 1 WHIP and a 24% K rate.
No chance. We're just an ageist group as fantasy players. By design, by the way, I always make that joke. Like, I'm not saying like we're bad people for that. No, you should be, right? Like, players get worse as they age. That's just how it is. You got to be smart about it. Doesn't mean you have to run from every guy, though. And I think Renaud Blanco could be interesting. Who else we want to get to on this list? Because again, there are a lot of great names on here.
Well, speaking of hot summer guys, it would be Grady Sizemore being the interim manager for the White Sox.
I love that, by the way.
It's so good.
Because the bar's on the floor. He doesn't have to do much. He can get the job. And then, like, you know, they're terrible, right? I'm not going to pretend they aren't. But they have real talent coming.
I didn't even know that he was, like, involved in baseball in the slightest anymore. I didn't know. I didn't know that Grady Sizemore was still someone that people... I didn't know.
I didn't either. I really didn't know that, like, he was in contention... For the job.
Oh, man. It's so cool. I love it.
But that's great. Let's use that then as a jump off.
Yeah.
He's the manager of a guy that's going to get, I mean, we're going to get so many million questions about him. So let's get started early with next year on Garrett Crochet. Because, you know, you're in. Okay. So, because I think the price will be pretty high.
I think he gets dealt in the offseason.
He gets healthy in the offseason. Is that what you said? Gets dealt in the offseason. Okay.
What really happened is the White Sox were like, okay, you know what? Look. The worst thing that can happen right now is that Garrett Crochet gets injured.
Right.
And then has to get Tommy John before we can deal him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to pitch in the playoffs unless he gets an extension. We're not going to do that. Right. We're not going to make that happen. No team's going to take that risk at this moment. So the trade value went down and they said, well, he's got what, 2 years left on the contract? 1 year left?
2 years. Next year and 26.
25 and 26. So... obviously, they're going to go to the winter meetings and say, great, who needs, you know, let's get something for Crochet for next year. Mm-hmm. I would be shocked if you were on the White Sox again. I do think that they're going to push him a little bit now. There was always a reason for why he was being slowed down for the past month. And you look back at July and it's like, oh, it's like 16 innings or something. This is dumb. Nick, you should have lowered him massively. Weeks ago, and I say, well, he had a game where he went 4 innings, but it was 90 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had a game where they said they're going to slow him down. So we're going to do 2 innings
right before the break. Yeah.
And then we'll have it before the break. And he'll be the fifth starter. So fine. And then it's right at the trade deadline. And they're like, we might trade him. So you know what? We're going to slow this one down.
Slow him down. Yeah.
And then they say, okay, we haven't made a deal yet. It's Sunday. We'll slow him down. Then he's like, okay, contract extension, blah, blah, blah. So fine. Now we're past the deadline. So now we got to ramp him up one more time. So now he went up from like 50 pitches to like 77. And that's where we are now.
Right. That gets us current coming off of a start five days ago.
Like
I don't either. So, okay. Here's the thing though.
Yeah.
You still have to start Crochet, don't you?
Oh, of course you do.
Okay. Just making sure that we're clear that like you can't try to time it. Because you're going to come back and throw 7 with 14 strikeouts when you're trying to time it. Just put him back in when he's pitching, and he is. So, absolutely. Okay, we're on the same page there.
Yeah.
But for next year, I'm also probably in because I agree on being dealt, but also I think there should be enough concern that his price probably won't be crazy, at least not early. I mean, I don't do all my drafts early. Mm-hmm. But I will be interested to see how the price changes. I do think he is one of those guys that if you do draft – do stuff in the fall and winter, I think he will be cheaper. And then people will see him again in spring. especially if it's with a new team, and they'll be like, okay, Garrett Crochet is fully healthy. He's on the Padres because that's the only team the White Sox trade with. And he's a god, you know? So I do think he'll be somebody that gets a lot of helium in spring. So if you like him, you should get a lot of your shares in the fall and winter of Garrett Crochet. Not that those will be cheap, but I think they'll be sky high if he has a good spring.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Red Sox to get him. I mean, you're talking about the teams that they trade for. I'm like, okay, hold
exactly.
on a second. With the Nationals and the Red Sox. So.
Hey, the last time they traded for an amazing lefty, it worked. Crochet was great. I mean, he got hurt, but like that's time. That's going to happen.
Oh, then you have Giolito coming back midseason, and you have, you know, Bayo in there. So there's three of them.
Should we not just transition to the Red Sox?
Yeah, I mean, the Red Sox. Put the Red Sox in like capital letters.
Yeah, he just put the Red Sox because it's an interesting group, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of intrigue here. Houck's continuing to do the thing. By the way, you were the first one to tell me about that terrible meme. Remember how I didn't know it?
Oh, no. No.
I'm just saying. And then I couldn't get away from it. No, you ruined it. Don't, no, me. You did that to me.
Do anything to you.
Cutter Crawford has not kept it going. The home runs have caught up to him. Brian Bayo has ebbed and flowed, kind of shown his flashes and whatnot. Has looked a little bit better recently, but the results still aren't great because he's also a home run machine. Has 10 wins, though. And then Nick Pivetta pulled the football again, y'all. 4.44 ERA, 1.14 whip. Do love the 1.14 whip, though. That plays, but also a home run machine. Damn. And then Cooper Criswell. Has been kind of the out of nowhere guy. Not really.
Criswell. Oh, man. He had that one game that was kind of cool.
Right.
Man, now Paxton's there. And it's like, oh, yeah.
Right.
This makes sense.
So I want to focus on Houck first because he's the guy that's, you know, barring a collapse, which could still happen. There's 2 months left. So I'm not saying like anything's set in stone, but he looks pretty consistently strong right now. Like he can be trusted to be a top what guy?
So you want to know something crazy, Spore?
You're concerned.
I'm in a 12-teamer I have a very good rotation. This is the league where I was able to pick up both Kikuchi and Michael King and Ryan Pepiot.
Ooh, they done messed up. Three of those.
And I dropped Tanner Houck yesterday. It's a really rough schedule moving forward. His splitter is not nearly as good as it was before, not as consistent.
I respect it.
And he gets the Astros next, and I'm like, no. And then he's going to get some other bad matchups in the future too. It's a rough schedule for the Red Sox as a whole moving forward. So you're in a position. I mean, you might want to drop Cutter Crawford too.
He goes to Baltimore after that.
And the only one that I feel actually okay with at the moment is Brian Bayo.
Is Bayo? Okay, so let's talk about what he's been doing recently then, because he's looked better with the stuff.
Pitch guy. Yeah, it's sinkers, changeups, and sliders. And what's so interesting with him is that there have been moments with each one of those failing where the other two have had to do the rest. And entering the season, we were really curious about the slider adding on because the sinker and changeup have been the thing for Bayo for ages. That was what got him through 2023, and he was just trying to find something else. And all of a sudden, now you look at him, he just had a 42% CSW slider as his most thrown pitch. Like, that's huge. The changeup was good. It got a 53% O swing with 61 strikes, which is so good. But the sinker just had 3 called strikes. It's like, no, that's the one that sets the foundation. The other two build. Right. And without that, then everything is struggling a little bit more. So with Bayo, I look at him and I go, well, you are a foundation of sinkers and changeups. That is something that should always be there for you. And this new addition of the slider is really exciting for the future. If I'm going to bank on something with Bayo, it's that, no, you're going to still have your sinker and changeup. So I'm excited. I think that you're going to see the old skills return and this new skill stick around. Bayo is probably my favorite one, but I got to mention again, like the sketches.
Texas at Baltimore next week. Texas at Baltimore.
I'm in.
I think Let's I'm in it. Too. I'll take the home run guy to Baltimore. I know if you listen to my podcast, Sleeping in the Bus, I say it every time. I'm still just so...
What podcast? I've never heard
that. It's called The Sleeper in the Bus. No, I'm just still so not used to saying going to Baltimore if you have a home run.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Right. Like, I just grew up with, like, give me Mark Trumbo in the 18th round and it's 30 bombs guaranteed because he's going to get 15 of them in the summer in Camden.
Who is the modern day Mark Trumbo?
Oh, there's plenty of them. Yeah. I mean, it's that type of player. Yeah. Like Randall Grichuk because they're both right handed.
I mean, Santander, but Santander's better.
Well, Santander's like the high end of it. He's doing what Trumbo used to do in Camden. Now, he didn't have the benefit. Santander doesn't have the benefit of what Trumbo had. So anyway, it just feels weird saying you're happy to take a home run guy into Camden. But Bayo, home to Texas, they don't scare me as much. And then going to Baltimore, while Baltimore does scare me, at least it's in Baltimore, I will start him next week, 12s and up. And maybe some 10s. I don't hate it. I really don't. I've been watching him. And again, the results aren't as strong as the stuff is suggesting they should be. I think is another level here, exactly like Nick's saying.
Oh, man. So Bayo is someone I don't think is going to go away. I think next year I'm actually going to be circling Bayo a little bit.
I think
The other ones still feel like you're going in and out. Sometimes you have the cutter. Sometimes you have the sweeper. Sometimes you have this. It's like it's not consistent enough for me. By the way, I know this is going to sound weird. I'm going to talk about hitter for a quick second. We have this new thing called Process Plus. I don't know if you've checked it out at all, Spore, Process Plus.
I am aware.
And to me, it's like the most fun thing ever because you have the three metrics that matter to me, which is decision value. Are you swinging the right things? Are you making contact when you do? And are you hitting it for power? And I've been trying to figure out how I feel about the Rangers offense to stream against for a while. Adelis Garcia's Process Plus of 2023 versus 2024 is so ridiculous. You see him from 2023, just how good he is. And then you see in 2024, just how bad he is. And it's just a decline.
How annoying am I to be the guy who says this is exactly what I was talking about in 2022 and 23 with him. And I don't know how he was so good and made me look so stupid for 2 years. Nick, I know you don't know this because this is a hitter thing, but I downed him for 2 years, pretty aggressively the first year. I was like, so he went 31-16 out of nowhere in 2021. So people are like, oh, power speed guy, Adolis Garcia. I'm like, he's 28, worst plate skills ever. He goes out and goes 27-25 after I downed him all year. I was like, I doubled down. I'm still not buying him. So he goes 40-10, technically 39-9, but we'll give him 40-10. Yeah. Shoves it in my eye again. Now, I didn't come all the way around this year, but I said, I'll leave him alone. I said, you guys do whatever you want. You can draft him. I didn't keep hammering it. I was like, I took the L. I should have hammered it one more year, Nick. No, I was never
so many pitchers over the years.
And I was never rooting against him or whatever, but this is exactly what I was worried about. To hear you say that about his Process Plus for Adolis Garcia being that bad, that is literally what I was worried about. But he was able to succeed these last few years without a great process, because that happens, because he has otherworldly athletic talent. So I'm really, I tip my cap to Adolis.
Sending me all these random charts over the next week or so. It is a PL Pro only app that you can use. Just go to the PL Pro tools, go to the PLV apps, and it's underneath hitter rolling charts. It is, you can get so addicted to this. It's the only thing, if I'm picking up a player on my teams, I just go to this and I go, all right, let me just look up the guy that's available who's doing well right now. Fine. What's his Process Plus? Nope, not going to do that. Oh, cool. He hit a home run. Great. I'm happy for him, but the decision value and the contact ability are still bad. Nope, I'm not going to do this. You'll see the rolling charts of it all. It is so. Ooh. Oh, good.
I'm curious. I'm not going to look it up and derail, but I'm curious if Reese Hines, remember when the Reds prospect was hitting a billion homers, was he having a bad process? Because we knew he was going to be Aristides Aquino.
Yeah, well, right. That makes a lot of sense. So I go straight into the app. I put in Reese Hines and let's see what we get for him. Did he get enough?
Maybe not.
Pitches.
40 plate appearances.
Only 132 pitches faced. His Process Plus was actually decent. It was mostly made up in power, but contact was above average.
Well, he was hitting 316.
So it's an interesting thing about decisions is that you can be making bad decisions, but as long as you're making contact, who cares?
Exactly. Adolis Garcia.
Amazing power. Right.
Adolis Garcia, so again.
Contact, then it's like, then okay. Or if you're not getting power behind it, then okay. It's actually the Gleyber Torres thing. Amazing decisions. Amazing contact, but power is way down.
And so it's not mattering.
And it's a cool thing about the charts is that you actually see of all three, Kyle made an amazing thing, Kyle Bland, of just, you can see each individual aspect independently along
this
the way.
This is so good.
It's really amazing. Right now. It's like, I got to say, I haven't pushed a stat that we've had like this in a very long time. Like CSW was the last, maybe PLV a little, but
CSW.
I don't know. This is to me just like the most obvious hitting metric. Like I genuinely
I seriously love this. I mean, just to give the top, right? Like, because the first thing you do when you do a stat, you got to check the top. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, Marcelo Zuna, Tatis yep. Jr., Vlad Jr., Bobby Witt Jr., I guess, while yeah, we're doing right. that. But like, so the right guys are there. I love that Rooker is three spots
Rooker
lower.
Is up there. I mean, he's amazing. His power is changing it, but it's because
well, for sure.
contact and his decisions aren't making it work. Like, isn't pulling on so much. Like, contact 91, yeah. but the Aaron Judge is an 89, you know? So it's
exactly.
It's interesting to see that.
I do love this. And by the way, like the Yankees are really flipping baseball on its head though, right? Because like the whole thing about baseball is you're not supposed to have be able to have like a one or two man lineup, but they do. And this well, process plus kind of shows how unbelievable they are. They're light years ahead of the rest of the league. If there's somebody else, I'll give them their credit if you're trying to say that. But I'm just trying to point out that they're 161 and 157, yeah. Soto and Judge in process plus. Ohtani's at 149. They are right. a cut above.
It's kind of it's absolutely bonkers.
They're unreal.
Look at the guy between Rafael Devers and Gunnar Henderson. So after Bobby Witt Jr., it's Kyle Tucker, Rafael Devers, this guy, and then Gunnar Henderson and Royce Lewis.
Wait. Where am I looking? Oh wait, this how many plate appearances? How many pitches do I have to have?
500's fine. At 500, you only have 570. But you see.
Okay. They're all 124. Mine are sorted differently. I have Ben Rice lower. I see him now.
Yeah.
He's between Gunner and Kerry Carpenter. Is that who he's between for you?
Rafael Devers and Gunnar Henderson. But I mean, 124. Yeah. All these guys are 124.
So. Right. So Ben Rice. So he came out like a house on fire, slowed down a little bit. So with the process plus here, you feel confident that even when he's having a lull, Ben Rice can get back on track.
Yeah. I mean, this is so funny. I'm talking about hitters, guys.
This is wild, but this stat, it does rule.
It's so fun because I'm looking at the process plus across like every, it's a rolling of 400 pitches seen. And it's just, it's the same. It's the same throughout the entire time. If I have to do a rolling of like 100 pitches, let's take a look at this. Yep. Pretty much the same. It's pretty bonkers. He was pretty bad actually initially, and then once July hit, he got that. Actually, it wasn't bad. It was just worse. Ben Rice is legit.
I think so too. I'm actually really excited about him. And again, I know he's hit the skids again, but if he's catcher eligible in your league and you play two catchers, I'd pick him back up. I think he can bounce back. But enough hitters. Probably need to take a break and then come back with games.
Absolutely. Oh man, I got to hit the reset button, take a shower, get this guy Nick back in. we'll be back in just a moment. All right, so we have games to do. I have an out in 20 minutes, so we're gonna look back at this list a bit. I do want to talk more about like the guys who are more of your Tobys, I would say,
right?
Who I do expect this happens every single year. It's one of the things that we get. I get kind of, I don't know, I want to say roasted on, but it is the biggest. It's usually the biggest thing that I need to push back on every year, and I'm often wrong about it. You know, there's certain guys that really do step forward. I'm like, oh, never mind. Like Seth Lugo. I mean, I'm still interested in Seth Lugo. Didn't expect him to do this.
Right.
And I think he's going to slow down a little next year. I think everyone does. But regardless, it's like, you know, I'm thinking about entering this year. There was like Jordan Montgomery, Eduardo Rodriguez, Aaron Civale, those kind of arms who are, it's not really pushing the needle. They obviously took a step back, but even if they were exactly what we were expecting, it still isn't quite as overwhelming as others that could have been in that range, and not to say that all those worked out. It's just clear cut, and that's generally what I like. I mean, Zach Eflin, you can even throw into that too, of a showcase of, hey, that's more of the Toby-esque.
When his Toby-esque price point was higher, and I think this is maybe to the point what you're making is that like you maybe take an L on that guy last year, but you stay the course with Eflin. You don't move him up your board a million. You move him up, you know, reasonably. And then when he comes back to earth the way you expect, because like he was good last year and I liked Eflin. I actually had Eflin pretty high because I thought he had more legitimacy than we saw.
23 or something. I didn't have about 15. But
He's kind of the highest end version of this player that we're talking about, though. Yeah. Right?
So like what Lugo's doing. Lugo's going to be like that next
year. Exactly. That's basically the road I was taking was going to be the final point was going to be that it's Lugo. So keep going.
So on the same note, though, like other guys are going to be like Sean Manaea and Tyler Anderson and Gavin Stone and Eric Fede and Ryan and Kyle Gibson. I could even throw like Jake Irvin maybe.
I was going to ask, is he in that group?
Yeah. Tobias Myers, Ben Lively, who has been absurdly productive.
Right.
For me, all Bahamian. These are all guys that I won't touch in drafts unless it's like my last round or something like that, unless they have a good opening matchup. I think it's a really important distinction for drafts to say, I'm not, you know, Ariel Cohen taught me this, and I know it sounds so silly, like obviously, Nick, you have to do this, but it really changed my framework of drafting. He said, if you leave the dollar spending $260 of auction dollars to get $260 worth of value, you've lost because you've now made an average team.
Right.
You've made a sixth place team.
Sure.
Right. And if you draft with an idea of getting the average, you know, like the basic fine, okay players, you're going to have a fine, okay basic team. And I generally think, especially in 12 teamers, this is why they're called Tobies, don't draft Tobies, is
right.
Yes, there are times that they can be more than that. Seth Lugo, Ranger Suarez for the first 2 months. That was
absolutely
the most ridiculous thing ever.
But he also kind of proves your point a bit.
He fell off, right? And right, he does prove my point in the sense that, yeah, you don't need to spend up for the Eflin one. You can, there will be someone else that's later on with it. Good luck figuring out who that is.
That's the tough part, of course.
Right. And that's going to be fine. You're going to miss it, probably.
Yeah, and but who also, cares?
All of these guys, Minaya, Lively, Anderson, maybe Stone, I don't know, but like Fedding, Kyle Gibson, like Jake Irvin, free. Absolutely free.
Right. Right.
So when you see this happening, you can adapt to it. And
or different named versions of them.
Right.
You got Schwelly in there. Isn't
well,
he not?
He was just kind of, I was going down the list and being like, who are the exceptional ones? I'm like, well, Schwellenbach is kind of a new thing.
Yeah, because I think he could maybe be a little bit of a cut above. Okay. I think he's above this group.
Yes, I agree with you. This is literally me typing it out from the list.
Okay, no problem, no problem. Because I'm higher on Schwellenbach for next year, I will be drafting him. He's showing swing and miss that I wish Jake Irvin had. If Jake Irvin could give me a little swing and miss, I'd be more in. I like him. He's a fighter. He got that dog in him. I root for Jake Irvin, but I'm with Nick. I'm not drafting him next year. Even in 15s, I might draft him like late.
Right.
But I can't see the breakout without some swing and miss. Schwelly brings a swing and miss. He brings a swing and miss.
What's kind of funny though is Jake Irvin, I think two of his last three starts have come with like 15% plus swing strike rate on his
right season, he hints at different elements throughout the year. Been an intriguing season. There's a world where like he goes to a tread or a drive line, they unlock the right pitch. That's what I'm saying. Like, so he'll remain on my radar, and if we get some news in the fall or in winter, cool, I'll draft Jake Irvin. But if it's just the same guy and he's going to come back with the same profile,
you know what? The deal breaker for me on Jake Irvin?
What?
Pitches for the Nationals.
Well, that's fair, but you don't think that they could start to be good kind of soon?
No, I think more of like their development.
Don't trust their development. That's fair. I have no pushback for that.
Pitching development at all. I mean, look at Mackenzie Gore. Right. He came in to the season throwing 97, brand new guy, and they can't fix him. They can't adjust with him.
At nothing. He is broken, and I feel terrible for him.
I do too.
Parker's falling apart too.
I'm saying, like, man, can somebody please try and get Mackenzie Gore from the Nationals? Like, why would they trade him away? Like, I know, I just want the guard to be happy.
Right. Maybe they trade him away because they think he's beyond repair, and then a real team gets him, and
then bam, Joe Musgrove,
you know, does two things. Exactly.
But then you have Schwellenbach. I'm very much with you on this. What's so intriguing about him is like he has all the things that you kind of want of like bonus points.
Right.
Like, he's got six pitches, bonus point. You have swing and miss ability, bonus point. You aren't focused on four-seamer overwhelming everything, bonus point. You play for Atlanta, great.
Bonus point, yep.
You know, like, it's kind of wild in that way. And, you know, one of the things that I got really hyped about last year and why, I mean, by the way, I don't mean to make every single podcast about Cole Reagans. I'm like, he's a different guy than he is right now than he was last year.
I'm always
what
down
made
to
me
talk
so excited was that he had five pitches, was that he had this and also didn't really have like a detrimental pitch inside that arsenal. What it's turned into a little bit is the command is not as strong on some of them. His velocity is a little down with what he's saying is lower half mechanic stuff. Not arm fatigue, which is at least encouraging to me, but that's another story. With Spencer Schwellenbach, it is a wide arsenal with above average command. And doing the doing this with Eno yesterday, he's, I think, the only one underneath 25 with 100 or above stuff plus on four-seamer and slider and location plus.
That's so incredible. Yeah. This is why I love Schwellenbach. So my comparison is only that they're Braves organizational prospects who were not top 100 guys when I make this ask. Mm-hmm. Not even saying it is this. Could he be their next Strider, though? Meaning, no. not the same way they do it, but does he have ace potential? Because neither were top 100. The comparison is Braves prospect that was not a top 100 guy that developed into an ace kind of before our eyes. Because Strider was not a top 100 dude.
And he
appeared and he's a god. Does Schwelly have an ace path? Again, they do things differently. So that's the comparison ends here.
You're asking the wrong question.
Why?
Because you should be asking, is he the next Max Fried?
Because of the deep pitch arsenal.
Because he's a kitchen
and
sink
command and control. And right.
Overpowering four-seamer.
I was just going for Max Fried was a top 10 prospect.
Yeah, I know.
So I was just going for the prospect angle. There.
I love that. That's fun. And what's interesting too, he's not really Max Fried either, because when it comes to his secondaries, he already has, I think, more whiff ability.
Exactly. But he doesn't have the left-handedness that gives Fried a bigger margin for error too.
And I think Fried has a little bit better. I mean, it's interesting. Fried never really has had the best slider and curveball command. And
true. Me. Not at the same time, at least.
Right. And the fastball is so good. Goes in and out beautifully. And the changeup has been so much better. And that's like that's good stuff. But like, can you please do it with a slider and curveball too? That'd be great.
I know he's already 30 and the injuries are starting to pile up, but it just feels like there's one year where both breakers click and he puts up a 15% swinging strike and he strikes out 30%. And we're like, dang, that's fun.
There it is.
Just like 1 year. Just 1 year. Go for the K's.
Routinely, even it was this year included, was like you struggle at first and then you get it together. Mm-hmm. And before you just got recently hurt, like that's what Fried did again.
Yep.
But we're talking like 2-4 ERAs from after like the second or third game of those respective seasons for the rest of the year was just so crazy. He's so fun. I'm a big fan of it. But yeah, Schwellenbach, he's not a Baja man to me. He's someone that I'm going to be circling for next year. There might get to be too much hype because I think
that's fair.
It's really, really hard to discern a rookie's ability to command. It is so hard.
Right.
I remember watching his first game and feeling like this guy is in control. This is cool. And he has generally continued that. However, things can get messed up.
It's 65 innings.
In a rhythm. I mean, the guy came
up. This is Schwellenbach we're still talking about.
Yes, from the minors. So quickly, too. He had 4 good games or whatever it was. Like, welcome.
Skip AAA.
Yeah. I think it was like, was he even AA too? I don't know. It was something stupid.
13 innings at AA before he's in the majors. Now, a little bit older at 24 for Schwellenbach. So like that compensates for it a little bit. Right. But like rocket ship to the majors.
So it could just be a moment. And we don't really know. But it does feel like it's a little bit better than other guys. So
it'll be price dependent, but I'm going in believing that I'm going to be in. If the market prices me out, I'll adjust on Schwellenbach. But as it stands right now, I'm fully in.
Sweet. All right. So on that lovely, lovely note, we are going to do our games. And I know that, guys, we haven't done as many consistent podcasts. So that
July was a little bit.
I mean, July, I was traveling twice.
Right.
I was a little bit busy. He's also really nice with my schedule. So you know what? That happens. I'm here, baby.
We're ready to go.
I'm flying out on a Tuesday. In 3 weeks, but
going to work around it. I would love to. Are you going? Aren't you going to a game with the folks?
I am.
Oh man, I want to? I do.
Actually, what we're going to do, Spore?
What
we're going to do a live episode of The Craft before that game.
Oh my god!
With everyone who's going to be at that game. Come on!
When is it? When is it?
August 30th. It's a Marlins game.
I know, but that's like stupid. You're going to hate the reason I can't go. You're going to be so disgusted. I don't even want to tell you.
Don't tell me it's football.
It is.
God, fuck.
I know.
Whatever,
They're live drafts. They're like pretty much my only time I connect with these friends, even though they live here. Oh. Well, not everyone. People come back to Austin for it. So yeah, I missed one last year. I don't want to miss this year. So it sounds like a great time. Justin was talking about it. And I'm like, that's going to be amazing though.
Oh man. I'm happy to like do this 2 years in a row. Maybe it becomes like a thing. That's always like August or September.
If it becomes a thing, then I'm coming next year.
Oh, that'd be so fun. If you guys listening right now are going to be in San Francisco that week, reach out on Twitter, on Discord. We're all trying to go to that game against the Marlins on August 30th. So everyone's going to be there. Toby's going to be there. Baffle Crazy. You're going to have Casey Bubba, Jake Crumpley, Doug Thorburn, Justin Mason,
I have so many others I'm forgetting for some reason right now. It's going to be great. Now, Sam Reed's going to be there. Oh, my gosh.
And Doug Thorburn, his partner.
Oh, Doug Thorburn, of course. And Daniel Salinger and a couple friends on my side, too. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be great. But we got to talk about our games. So we're going to do that.
We do.
After the break. All right. So we got a review. I know it was a while ago. People forgot the things that we did. I'm going to, for the sake of time.
Yeah.
Say score.
Just highlight
it. What is the score right now between me and you?
So you cut the lead. It's down to 29 me, 28 you. After a 3-2 week, you did well. You had guys come through for you. You won the game of the week, even though the guys didn't play each other, King and Grayrod. We took King versus Baltimore, Grayrod versus San Diego. It works. You get the point there. So yeah, 3-2 you this week, and we're just 1 point apart going into this week's game. So let's get started with our streamer. 20% or lower at Fantasy Pros. And they got to score 10 points for you on DraftKings, which is on the baseball reference game logs. You can find their DK and FanDuel points. We use those DK points.
Oh, man. So Martin Perez, I mean, this is the thing. You remember in the beginning of the year, he was such a good streamer.
Right.
And then he got
He's in rhythm for 10, 12 starts a year. Martin Perez, a good major league pitcher. There you go. 7%.
The Marlins are kind of like weirdly beating up on some guys.
Yes, they are, including Taj Bradley. But I'm still not running from them, but I have noticed it as well, where I'm like recommending guys heavily. I'm like, oh, it's against the Marlins. And then I'm like, they got cooked?
Andrew just had 600 runs, but like a really good game. I don't know.
It was very bizarre. I'm going back to the Jose Soriano. Well, y'all, I can't stop until you guys start rostering him more. I'm not going to stop. 16% Washington. They're not terrible, but they did trade one of their best players in Lane Thomas. So I'm not terribly worried about them. Respect to Abrams, Luis Garcia, and James Wood, but I'll go with Jose Soriano. I love that guy.
Nice. And Sid of the Week, who you got this week?
I'm going, this one stings because I love Christopher Sanchez, but I got to do it.
Why?
It's going to Arizona. And Arizona is back, y'all. Watch out. Corbin Carroll's getting back. Be very careful with Arizona right now, especially if you got lefties going against them. 56% rostered. I love Christopher Sanchez. We're not cutting him anywhere, but if you're looking for a sit somewhere, I think him in Arizona, Christopher Sanchez is what you got to do.
I got the easy one. Tanner Houck, 86% rostered. I mean, it's just against the Astros. Like, he's just not there.
He's just not in rhythm, and you don't want to go against Houston, even when guys are in rhythm. Yeah. Pass. Easy pass. Love your star of the week. 50%.
I mean, I like yours too. I got River Ryan against Pittsburgh because it's interesting. I thought about not doing it because we don't really know who he is yet. He had one really good game against the Astros. That's where the command was all put together. The approach was right, and he dominated. And we've seen two starts of still trying to figure it out. And he gets Pittsburgh, I think, a second time. So hopefully it's better this time because it wasn't quite all there. I think his stuff is just so good. I think more time on the hill is just going to benefit River Ryan. So he's my star.
Oakland last time.
That's right. And I love your star, of course. I mean,
love what our boy Jameson Taillon's been doing. Right. Jameson Taillon, been a fan of his since his prospect days with Pittsburgh. Root for him always. Good guy. 325 ERA, 116 whip on the season. Results are there. Skills are there. I've been watching him more. And I just think he can easily keep it rolling at the White Sox, obviously, right? So it's basically a home game there. 42% rostered. I'm surprised he's that lowly rostered. Like, I know it's shallower leagues, but he's been going so well. I know he doesn't bring a ton of Ks, and maybe that's just what it is, but I love what Jameson Taillon's been doing this summer.
The White Sox.
You got to go for him against the White Sox. That's like slam dunk.
Yeah, that's a good
call. Then,
we
did our one game matchup. And when you proposed it to me, I was like,
I don't know.
That is a lot closer than I thought. He said, what about Gerrit Cole versus Nathan Eovaldi? I was like, well, what? Huh? Okay. Yeah, that is really difficult. And he's like, who do you want? And I labored on it for like 10 minutes, y'all. In the end, I did take Cole. Honestly, I think I'm just getting a little better end of a coin flip here. What, 52-48 type of vibe? It's not like Cole is completely in rhythm right now, so I'm not getting quote-unquote Gerrit Cole. He's just back, not looking amazing, but I'm fine with it, and I'll take my Judge and Soto to hopefully help get a win because that's where we got to score those DK points, right? So we do care about the win in this situation.
Yeah, I get it. Eovaldi, I actually do wonder, like, the Yankees being so stupid good, how often do they see really good splitters? And I'm not talking about Gausman's because Gausman's has not been good.
It's not been good.
Great. So maybe that is more of a nullifier than other
kryptonite.
It's possible. It is in Yankee Stadium.
Evaldi is a big game guy, though. I mean, yeah. I know that's like a nebulous thing. I'm not saying like that you could bank on that or whatever, but no. For our one game matchup here, I don't ever worry about him wilting under pressure. He might have a bad game because New York's good, but he's Nathan Evaldi's a stud.
He is a stud. And that is going to conclude this fireside chat. As you can see, of course, the logs are, well, they're running out and we got to save it. We got a long winter ahead, so we can't just keep piling on the firewood. I appreciate all of you watching after we did this one live for the first time. We didn't announce it anywhere. It's kind of funny for me to be like, we're doing this live thing for no one. I've done a gig like that before. It's not fun. This was fun though.
I did stand up in front of like nobody or one person is worse. I'd rather do it to an empty, like people just working at the club.
One person
than like, one person.
And they feel really weird because they're like, oh,
exactly. And I'm like, you don't have to pretend that was good.
Right. Oh gosh. But definitely go to the YouTube channel for the Fireside Chat podcast with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Spore, you got your rankings coming out, right? That's what you're doing this next week.
Ranking update will be out in time for next week. We will have our debates, see where we're at on some guys, and maybe adjust some rankings.
Oh my gosh. I, of course, will have my normal cadence of articles as I'm back home. But I will be here for Mondays, so I got the list and everything good. But that is going to do it for today. On behalf of Paul Spore, my name is Nick Pollock, and it was fun hanging with you by the fire.
Take care, Nick.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter @Spore and @PitcherList.